Yeah, I'm green. Good.
Flip is back. Race cars, RDC. Tell us all about it.
Yeah, so this is about race cars, RTCP, video, and 5G. It's kind of actually a little bit of a low-level thing. What I'm going to do, though, and it's mostly about, I'm Tim Panton, I'm CTO at Pipe. I wrote a WebRTC stack for small cameras, which was originally kind of for baby monitors and stuff like that. And it's hugely based on open source modules. And this talk's actually about a kind of derivative of that that we've been doing, which is a race car camera. This is an early prototype of it, plastic case. The real thing is aluminium and carbon fiber, and the antenna are mounted on the dashboard and not like rabbit ears like this. But I'll pass this round. If anyone wants to like have a look at it, that's fine or not, doesn't really matter. So the cool thing about these things is we're trying to get live video from the cockpit, from the car to the pit, and so the idea is that the pit crew can hear and see what's going on in the car in real time at low latency, and we're using 5G for that, and we're using WebRTC. So we decided like to try and make that work. We'd better do some testing. So we got a chance to do a test. I go back. No, wrong way. Go back. This is what I want. There we go. So we did a test of some data in Spain. And so what I'm going to show you is this is a car doing 130 kph round a track using naive RTP. So we're just setting a 5 megabits a second H.264 stream at 30 frames a second, and what you see is on the frame rate, it keeps flicking up and down. Typically, when we cell hop, we'll lose a lot of frames, and the frame rate will drop to zero. But the bit rate is about constant, and what that ends up with is being pretty much unusable for the pit crew because they keep getting stills. So if you do the same thing running our software, what happens is we vary the bit rate and the frame rate remains pretty much constant. So there are points on this track, particularly up that northern edge, where the quality of the signal isn't good enough and we have to drop the bit rate. But we can still keep a constant frame rate. So that's the kind of basic trick that we're doing here. So for those of you who for those of you who prefer numbers, that's like a roughly 50 times improvement on the amount of time that the screen is frozen, which is a useful metric. So what we did this test funded by the EU. The EU gave us some money to go and do this test, which was lovely. Thanks for Target X for administering that. And IDIADA, who run the test track, for bending their "there are no cameras on our test track" rule to let us take a camera there, which I really appreciate. It was a interesting set of bureaucratic negotiations, but we got there. So what's the difference between those two things? Where do we get the 50x from? How do we do it? Like, it was literally the same hardware, literally the same network, literally both using RTP over 5G, same codec, nothing really different. Same target bit rate, same endpoint, same track. So what was different? And the answer is RTCP. So what the heck is RTCP? It's the companion protocol that goes with RTP. It's the control protocol. It's a kind of feedback back channel. So that and basically RTCP messages come into like three categories. There's raw statistics, so things like sender reports, so like how many frames have arrived, how many packets have arrived, how many we lost, those sorts of things. Same thing for receiver reports. And there's a few kind of arcane control messages like buy, which doesn't actually do anything much, but it does exist, which is kind of nice. And then there's these feedback messages, which are to do with like picture loss, packet loss, and bandwidth estimation. And those are the ones that we're most interested in. And I should say I got this lovely diagram from Sahi's blog. So thanks to him for that. So the bad news about RTCP, although it does all this wonderful stuff for us, is it is my least favorite protocol. Of all the protocols I've ever implemented, it wins the prize for being ugliest. It's a mass of options. Like, everything is optional. And it used to run in its own port, and now it doesn't. So you don't even know, like, kind of exactly where it's going to be. And now it's muxed on RTP, which is actually the right answer, but, like, it always didn't used to be. And every extension got its own arcane, weird binary format. This one is my absolute favorite for that, which is the bandwidth estimator for in REMB. Is a, what is it, 18-bit mantissa, a 6-bit exponent, and an 8-bit source ID, all packed into 32 bits. So you have to unpack them and do a few shifts and ORs to get stuff out of it. And so as somebody who wrote SNMP stuff back in the day, like, I wish it was ASN1. And like, I know not many people actually would say that, but I really miss ASN1 for this kind of stuff. So the worst news is that to know what you're going to get, you have to do an SDP offer answer exchange. And you'll get what comes out of that exchange. You've got no further negotiation. There's not a request or anything. It's like, that's what comes out. So usual arcane SDP nonsense. So the things that you end up with in a WebRTC call, that in order of how you'd like, whether you'd like to receive them or not, I guess, REMB. So REMB or transport-wide CC, depending on whether you're running. If you're running multiple video streams, you want to use transport-wide CC. If you're running a single one, REMB is actually simpler, so which we are, so it's easier for us to use that. But basically, REMB gives you an estimate of what the channel is, bandwidth the channel is capable of. And it does that by looking at the packet arrival times. And as some network component in the middle starts to buffer, the packet arrival time starts to grow. And you can use that to deduce that something is about to fill its buffers. And therefore, you can cut back on what you're sending before it starts dropping packets. So that's the best possible outcome, that you can get there before it happens, before you lose anything. And that's like the ideal outcome. And that lets you minimize the latency. And minimize the freezing of packets. Next one down is if you haven't managed to do that, then, or something else on the network has happened, then you may have lost a packet. So NAC will tell you which packets have been lost and offer you the opportunity to resend them. And if you can do this within something like the frame interval or two, then it's probably not visible to the user. You can close that loop fast enough that the user probably doesn't see. If you leave it any longer than that, the jitter buffer grows, or something stalls, and so it's like a bad outcome if it's longer than that. But with a short round trip time and low latency, that's actually a pretty good outcome. So we limit the growth of a jitter buffer by actually not servicing older requests, because we don't think it's worth the cost. The next one down is NAT PLI, and this is kind of the worst case. We've lost a packet, we couldn't resend it, and worst of all, that packet contains something that the decoder needs in order to decode anything. At that point, you've got a frozen screen. And so you have to send a full frame, full keyframe back, and this NAT PLI is the decoder saying, hey, I'm completely lost, send me a full frame. So that is what you do. They're very expensive, so you want to try and restrict that situation to the very minimum. They're like 10x the size of a typical frame. And anything you can do, anything you sent before a keyframe is now useless because the context is wrong. So you can dump anything that's in the queue. There's a fourth one, which is a work in progress, which is RFC 8888, which is RTCP feedback on L4S. So L4S is this new little tiny addition to the IP, reuse of some bits in the IP header to mark that a device in the chain is allowed, in the network, is allowed to say, I'm reaching a congestion state, and it can set a bit in a packet as it goes through. This isn't widely deployed yet, but it's actually going to be really interesting as a way of finding out whether whether your network is approaching congestion. Hopefully we can use it to get much better bandwidth estimation. The experiments I've seen done on this so far actually generate worse results for bandwidth estimation, but hopefully that will change. So the summary here is RTCP lets us go from, well, it lets us cope with fluctuating network constraints. So like it lets us go from a frame rate that is like wildly varying on the left to a frame rate that's pretty stable on the right. And remember, this is the top speed on this is 160 kph, right? The far right-hand edge is the car's doing 160 kph. It goes through 12 cell hops per revolution. So like we're not just sitting still, we're definitely on the move. So by using RTCP we can do that, and the big piece is that we vary the bit rate. That's the big win. There are some other subsequent wins with the ability to resend packets that have been lost. So you might ask, what's all this got to do with open source? I mean, it's a nice RTCP education, but why is it open source? The answer is actually the implementation of RTCP is an open source thing that I wrote quite a long time ago called SRTP Lite, and I wrote it for Voxeo 10, 12, something like that years ago, and I've slowly been adding to it since. It's open source, it's I think an MIT license, and it has some support for RTCP, which is kind of why it gets into this talk and why we're using it. There's a sample app there for WIPI, which is the most basic implementation of WIP, which is the WebRTC video ingest protocol. But it uses that library, so it's a kind of way of seeing how the library fits together and how you could use it in a bigger app. And I actually have an ask, which is, I'd really like PRs for other RTP extensions, for RTCP extensions, for test suites, anything you want to generate for it, I welcome it. That would be wonderful. And particularly, anybody who wants to implement transport-wide CC for it, that would be wonderful. And also issues. Issues would be great, you know, anything like that. So contribute to that would be wonderful. So it's Steely Glint, SRTP Lite. So I'll take questions in the matrix room, or maybe here. We'll see how it goes. Contact stuff, and I do consulting on SRTP, RTCP, that kind of stuff. ICE, SCTP, WIP, all open source stuff, and also Python, GStreamer, the other kind of real-time things. And I build stuff with pipe. And just like with a few seconds left, I'm going to show you pipe in action. So this is the other camera, not the one that you're that's still going around the room, but this is a camera that's sitting outside, sitting in my home in the UK, looking out the window. And it's actually really interesting because I have terrible 5G there. And what happens is that it's, although we might set the set point up there, you won't get it. It'll come back down again. Your latency goes hugely up, and then we negotiate back down, hopefully, the bit rate. And we're right down at the less than half a megabit a second. But now we're kind of back to having a halfway sensible. Yeah, it's struggling, actually. But you can see the trees are moving, so we're still there. But that's looking out my window in Cheshire, and that's over 4G, I suspect, actually. But, yeah, 0.2 LTE. So that's the camera in action, and that one, wherever it is, if I plugged it in, would do the same thing here. So, that's me, I think.
Questions? During this test, has there been any hands?
Sorry, you're going to speak louder. I'm a bit deaf.
During these 5G tests, has there been handovers, or is it just the same antenna?
So that test was the repeat the question, which was that were there any handovers involved in the 5G test? The answer is yes, lots. So that track was covered by I don't know if I've got the diagram here. That track was covered by I think 7 or 8. So each of the blobs, the coloured blobs, is a separate cell base. So there was it. That's 7. And so there were 7 base stations, and actually going down the track, I think I counted it as either 12 or 14 hops. So hopping between cells regularly as it goes round. And the faster you go, the hops get worse. Like the, so does that answer the question?
Yes.
I have one question with the bit that you said that is the new RFC is like hop by hop, so you said that you get close to congestion to the next hop. You said that the RFC 888.
Oh yeah, yeah, RFC 888. So RFC 8888 is the RTCP feedback mechanism that covers the new use of, there's 2 bits in the IP header which were marked congestion or something, and nobody quite knew what to do with them. And recently there have been a bunch of, I say recently, the last few years, been a bunch of RFCs about how to use those, make good use of those. And that's just sort of emerging now in some mobile networks. You'll start to see that when equipment in the path sees that something is going into a queue or a particular queue, it's like interpretation's a bit vague, that it will set one of these bits. And then the endpoint that receives this can say, hey, well, I've got a packet, but it had this bit set, so I know that it was put into somebody's buffer along the chain. And then what RFC 888 says is, okay, on the basis of that, I'm going to send an RTCP feedback message back to the sender saying, of the last 5,000 packets, this, like 17 of them, have the congestion bit set. So you then know that maybe you're reaching congestion. I haven't had enough experience to use it yet, so I'm like speaking from having skimmed the RFC rather than fact.
Opposed
but
to the endpoint, I thought maybe it's hop by hop to
reset. So I think if you get one that where it isn't set, you're allowed to set it. If it's already set, you should leave it alone. That's but this is really for routers. Rather than, and then the endpoints get to say that they're interested in having it and interpret it is kind of the way it works, I think. But like I say, it's still something I want to get a chance to play with.
Thanks, Tim.